Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
So the question isn't how can we diagnose the disease, but how can we diagnose it earlier to prevent patients from slipping through the cracks? Because we have effective therapies, we know that the earlier we diagnose patients and put them on effective therapy, the better they're going to do.
Today, Drs. Dasgupta and Sarswat join the podcast to discuss early diagnosis, screening an ATTR-CM for heart failure with preserved ejection fraction and aortic stenosis populations in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Noelle Dasgupta, Associate Professor of Clinical Medicine at Indiana University School of Medicine.
And I'm Dr. Natasha Sarswat, an Associate Professor of Medicine at the University of Chicago Pritzker School of Medicine.
Thank you for being here, Natasha.
Happy to join, Noelle.
ATTR cardiomyopathy was once considered a rare disease, but now we're realizing it's a much more common cause of heart failure and maybe a common cause of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction and common in our older patients. One of the challenges is that the symptoms often overlap with other more common cardiovascular conditions, so many patients will have symptoms for years without being diagnosed with ATTR cardiomyopathy. So the question isn't how can we diagnose the disease, but how can we diagnose it earlier to prevent patients from slipping through the cracks? Because we have effective therapies, we know that the earlier we diagnose patients and put them on effective therapy, the better they're going to do. So let's start by talking about, where do you think we're missing this diagnosis?
So I think you're right. I mean, the problem is that despite great advances in our picking up these patients, diagnosing them earlier, we are still unfortunately missing a lot of people. And a good portion of the patients that I see being diagnosed are still seeing multiple physicians before they get a diagnosis. And that can be pretty traumatic for them. Certainly, the overall HFpEF population is a population that we should be screening. And lots of times, as I'm teaching doctors in training about amyloidosis, I'm telling them to focus on, as for instance, the inpatient HFpEF population and looking for certain red flags for amyloid. Similarly, our aortic stenosis patients and our TAVR patients, that's a population, a very high yield population where we're probably missing a lot of these patients. Patients with LVH overall, I think a lot of people will still explain away the LVH and say, oh, they have hypertensive heart disease. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is often still getting misdiagnosed. Patients with AFib, I think, are, and certainly patients that are going through multiple cardioversions, ablations, those are patients that are very high risk and could potentially have amyloid that we could still be missing.
Yeah, I completely agree. Those are patient populations which may have ATTR cardiomyopathy, and we really need to look more at them. What are some of the red flags that might make you trigger a workup?
Yeah, so I think one of the challenges with this disease is the super specialization of medicine. And I say it jokingly, but I think there's really a lot of truth in that, that medicine has become so specialized that there's one person taking care of your left pinky and another person taking care of your right nostril, and there's not often one person that puts those pieces of the puzzle together. So as I try to educate about this disease, I often tell people to look out for things like diarrhea that we're not always asking for, history of carpal tunnel, history of spinal stenosis, right? Most cardiologists in clinic are running day to day and are not stopping to think and ask a patient, hey, have you had carpal tunnel? And while most patients don't think it's pertinent in their history as they're discussing it with their provider. So those types of things, certainly trigger finger is something that we see. Rotator cuff problems, biceps tendon rupture are often, you know, kind of a lot of non-cardiac clues. The cardiac clues often end up being apical sparing when we do strain imaging on echo. We often see EKGs that are low voltage, even though there's a lot of LVH. Now, that certainly, if you don't have that, that doesn't rule out the disease, but these are kind of some of those clues that should make a light bulb go off to think, huh, could I be missing amyloid?
I completely agree. It's not just looking at the cardiac features, but it's really looking at the patient's whole presentation and looking for systemic symptoms and really musculoskeletal manifestations. And The diagnosis can still be hard to make because there are many other common conditions that can mimic this, but you really have to take a step back and look at the whole patient and see if their presentation makes sense. And then in patients like you stated with unexplained LVH or severe aortic stenosis, maybe consider going a step forward and doing more diagnostic testing. Now let's take a second to talk about bone scintigraphy and biopsy and non-biopsy diagnosis of amyloidosis.
Sure. So bone scintigraphy really has changed the way we diagnose amyloid, and really about 80% of amyloid now is diagnosed non-invasively. So up until 2016 or so, 2017, we really had to biopsy everybody's hearts, which, as you can imagine, talking to an 80-year-old sitting there in clinic, they get very scared when you start talking about biopsy. Now, fortunately, we realize that bone scintigraphy can be quite sensitive and specific for TTR amyloid once we've ruled out AL amyloid. And that's the key here, and is a critical step that I often see still missing on a lot of patients that come to amyloid clinic. The key there is to do to rule out a monoclonal spike on serum protein and urine protein electrophoresis and immunofixation. And if there is no monoclonal spike and the light chain ratio, the kappa lambda ratio, is normal, then we can proceed with a non-invasive pathway. If we see abnormalities in any of those three tests, then we really still have to go down the invasive testing pathway, which is a discussion with our hematologist and often a biopsy. I do want to stress that when we're talking about the biopsy in centers that are commonly doing endomyocardial biopsies, biopsies are generally safe and this should be done urgently and are a really good way of diagnosing amyloid quickly, because again, time to diagnosis here is essential.
I agree. When patients are thinking about ATTR cardiomyopathy, the first thing to do is to rule out light chain disease by checking the serum free light chains, the serum immunofixation, and the urine immunofixation. It's important to realize that the light chains may be affected by renal function, so we should take that into consideration when interpreting them. And if that workup is negative, we can do bone scintigraphy in most patients. But if, however, we have any questions after the bone scintigraphy is done, it's always appropriate to proceed with biopsy. And I think there's still many cardiologists that are not utilizing bone scintigraphy as probably as frequently as they should be.
Yeah, I agree. I think bone scintigraphy has really changed our ability to diagnose patients earlier, faster, and especially, you know, non-invasively, which is important to a lot of patients. I think the one thing that we should stress here, too, is if the bone scintigraphy is significantly abnormal, meaning grade 2 or grade 3, that seals the deal on the diagnosis for TTR, but you still have to do genetic testing to differentiate wild type from hereditary TTR amyloidosis. And that's a really important step here, not just for the patient, but for their family, and also can play into our treatment options here. So pretest counseling, actually doing the genetic testing and post-test counseling is a very important step in our diagnostic algorithm.
I agree. There's still a lot of patients that aren't undergoing genetic testing, and this is essential regardless of the patient's age. So that's very important to make sure that step is done. So are there any patients you would screen for ATTR cardiomyopathy in your clinics?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, since the goal is to catch them before they get to a cardiomyopathy, we're really trying to catch these patients early on when they have something like bilateral carpal tunnel. And we actually screen patients that are at high risk when they have carpal tunnel and take a piece of tissue at the time of carpal tunnel surgery. Similarly, potentially screening spinal stenosis patients has become an option. We are really pushing to try to use certain kinds of artificial intelligence in the echo lab to try and pick up amyloid earlier as well, because lots of times it's not just one particular thing on the echo that can give us a clue that there's potential amyloid deposition. And that can allow us to catch some of these patients again earlier on before they start showing true signs of a cardiomyopathy and then their most benefit from treatment.
Yeah, that's great. We have many opportunities to potentially catch these patients early. So we really want to try to do everything we can to not miss a diagnosis so patients can get started on effective treatment early.
I think similarly, screening patients, again, that have a lot of atrial fibrillation, potentially low-flow, low-gradient aortic stenosis, those are other opportunities, even on the imaging labs, that we can use. Cardiac MRI, I think, has also been really helpful in differentiating different causes of LVH that can help us pick up amyloid deposition as well.
That was a great discussion. Thank you so much, Natasha. I think one of the challenges for many clinicians is they never even think about the disease. So for patients to get a diagnosis, their clinician needs to think about it. So it's not just if we can test the patients, but who to test and when, and the cardiologist needs to think about it to make the diagnosis.
Exactly. And even when we do suspect it, the workup has to be done systematically, ruling out AL, using the right type of imaging and not stopping short, including genetic testing. The takeaway is simple. Recognize the red flags, follow the diagnostic pathway, diagnose earlier because now it truly changes our outcomes. Thank you, Noelle.
And thank you to our audience for watching.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PeerDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PeerDirect.com. Listen and subscribe to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to guests, Drs. Dasgupta and Saraswat. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.